Welcome to Claim Your Confidence, a podcast that will introduce you to the most powerful people in the world. No matter what obstacles you face, Claim Your Confidence will inspire and motivate you to go after the life you want. Are you ready to claim your confidence?
Hi, everyone. I'm Lydia Finette coming to you from Rockefeller Plaza on a beautiful, sunny winter day. Welcome to Claim Your Confidence. I'm so excited to be back. I can't tell you how excited and also kind of nervous I am for the interview today, because sitting on my screen right now is Anna Papalia, the CEO of Interviewology. She's a keynote speaker, a career influencer with over 1.5 million followers across social media platforms. But most importantly, she's written a book about interviewing. It's called Interviewology, The New Science of Interviewing, which asks the question, are you a charmer, a challenger, an examiner, or a harmonizer? And you know what, Anna, after reading your book, I have to tell you, I am 100% a charmer. So welcome to the show. I want to lead with that so you know going in exactly what you're up for.
Well, I love it. I'm in good company. I'm also a charmer.
Oh, great. Okay, perfect. Well, then I will follow your lead in that. Tell me a little bit about where you're from, who you are, where you came from. We've never met. I read your book. I loved your book. And I'm excited to talk more about this with you. But tell our listeners a little bit about you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. So I tell this story at the beginning of my book. I come from New England. I was born and raised in Maine. We moved around a little bit. Some of my formative experiences when I was young was I had to escape a very controlling and abusive stepfather. And I ended up taking refuge at my grandparents' house, only then for my grandfather to have a massive stroke a year later. And I was really left with not many choices, not many places to go. Everyone in my family assumed that I was going to go back and live with my mom and my stepfather, and I refused. It was a watershed moment in my life. I was 16 at the time. And it started my journey of being really independent. I ended up working really hard and paying rent and living in an apartment as a senior in high school. And I felt very strongly that a great college education would help me change my life. I also wanted to get the heck out of Maine.
Yeah.
So I applied to some great schools, and long story short, I got an admissions interview at the University of Pennsylvania, and I essentially told them the story that I just told you all, that I worked really hard to get myself out of a bad situation, and that was one of the reasons why I didn't have the best AT scores and I didn't play tennis. And the admissions officer looked at me and said, well, Ms. Papalia, you have a tough decision to make. You can wait, or I can accept you on the spot.
Wow.
And I decided for him to accept me on the spot because I was pretty sure he's going to change his mind if I left.
That gave me chills when you told me that story. So that was really a moment that not only changed your life, but changed the trajectory of your life in many ways. What was it like to be in college in a safe place after what you've come through in your life?
I wouldn't even categorize it as safe necessarily. I was still feeling very uncertain. I had to pay my own way. I was, you know, getting scholarships and financial aid. And if I look back at that time in my life, it still felt very, very tenuous. Mm-hmm. I was waiting tables. I was working 5-6 days a week to pay my bills, pay rent, afford textbooks. And then I had to start my corporate career. And I was making less, to be honest with you, when I started in HR than I had been when I was waiting tables, making $500-$600 of cash, you know, a night.
Yeah.
So I don't really think that my life started to feel safe until I was, you know, in my 30s, probably.
When you started in college, was it always HR that attracted you? Was that something that you thought of? It was something you knew of? I mean, you're nodding, so that must be a yes.
Well, it was a little bit of a journey. I actually went to school for psychology, so I assumed that I was going to become a psychiatrist or a psychologist or, you know, go into behavioral health, and I had internships. And on my second day of my internship, I was like, oh my God, I hate this. I don't like this at all. I felt like a fish out of water. Fast forward later, when I taught college students, I would tell them all, it's wonderful if you have an internship that you hate, because nothing helps you, you know, steer the direction of your life. And I have just always been very, very good at listening to my intuition. I really honestly cannot ignore it, mm-hmm. for good or for bad. I'm a little envious of people that can be living more denial, like these blaring intuition in my head, like, this is not for you. You don't fit in here. I think I would be happier in the corporate world. I think I would really enjoy that. So my next internship was in a corporate HR office, and I was an HR generalist. And I was terrible at it, like really, really bad. I don't really have a high attention to detail. And they were asking me to like update spreadsheets and like update employee data. And I was like, I have to fill out a form. I'm not doing this. And that's what I was doing. And I was like, wait a minute. I thought this was about people and that's who I am. And I was always so good at reading people and understanding people. And that's why I went to school for psychology. And no lie, very soon after, the recruiter randomly came over to my desk, put down a whole stack of resumes, and she was really overwhelmed. She's like, could you help me phone screen some of these candidates? Absolutely no training. And I was like, oh my God, they're going to pay me to talk to people on the phone? Yeah, yes. And I was a natural and I loved it. It was love at first sight. And I was promoted really quickly. I went from like almost getting fired to, you know, getting promoted like 3 times. And then I cut my teeth on real recruiting, and I worked at a boutique firm with 2 ex-accountants who had been burnt out from the Big Four, and they were great at recruiting, and they taught me all the tricks. I was hustling. That was my transition from psychology to HR and then ultimately recruiting.
For those of people who are listening who don't know exactly what a recruiter does, will you tell us what that job entails?
It could be conflated, right? So there's essentially 2 types of recruiters. You have an internal recruiter, which most people are familiar with. Let's say Coca-Cola, right? Mm-hmm. A large organization, Google, whatever. They're a huge corporation, and the corporate recruiters are in charge of hiring for the organization. And then you also have external recruiters, which work at very large recruiting firms or also small firms. There are also individual recruiters like that just start their own businesses, right? And they partner with these bigger companies and they get the recs, or, you know, they get an in where they're like, okay, if we find you a candidate, we'll charge you 20, 25, 30%.
Got it. Right? Okay. Yeah.
Sort of like a headhunting fee, essentially. So those are the really quick and dirty definitions of internal recruiter and external recruiter.
So you were at that point, happy in your job, everything's going well. What's the next step?
I was an external recruiter learning a lot. And then I had this craving to get back into more of a corporate function. And then really quickly, I was recruited by Commerce Insurance Services, owned by George Norcross. And they were divesting and becoming their own organization. It was this entrepreneurial atmosphere. So I joined in 2008. It was a lot of fun. I mean, we didn't even have a logo when I started. So it was really cool. And like, we were like moving offices. And at the time, I remember someone asking me, like, would you ever start your own business? I was like, absolutely not. I'm not an entrepreneur, but I was responsible for everything, writing job descriptions, creating the protocols. It was really fun. I was doing everything from scratch. And then I was promoted to the director of talent acquisition, and our company grew. And I was partnering with the C-suite, the executive vice presidents on recruiting strategies. I built an intern program. I loved what I did. I loved the company. I'm still great friends with most of the people that I worked with. I loved my boss. She was phenomenal. I wish for everyone to have bosses like that. I've always had really great bosses. I've been very lucky. And that intuition started humming again, and I couldn't ignore it. I was making tons of money. I was very happy. Always so inconvenient, that voice, but it was like, you don't want to be here any longer. And I was like, but I just got settled and I'm kind of never satisfied. And I had this really weird calling, is all I can say, not in a religious sense, but just this, I had to do this. And I thought to myself, I want to start my own business and I want to teach people how to interview. And I walked into the president's office and I resigned my very awesome job. And I said, I have a dream. And if I don't go do it now, I'll regret it for the rest of my life.
Wow.
I'm young enough and I don't have kids yet. If I don't do it now, I'll regret it forever. I think I was 32 at the time.
That's amazing.
And he put his glasses on the top of his head and he leaned back and he looked at me and he said, well, you got moxie. And literally, that's all I had. I didn't have a business plan. I remember walking out of his office thinking, oh my God, what did I just do? And so many times in my life, I've done stuff like that where it's just like, jump, the net will appear. I have to do it because I'd rather be poor and destitute than unhappy at work.
Wow. Truly. That's amazing. I mean, what a great way to live life. You just leap and the net will appear. I will borrow that phrase forever. I love it.
I think the one thing that you get from having a really tough childhood and starting out with literally nothing, I remember my first apartment, I had an air mattress and two milk crates that I used to keep my clothes in. And I always in my mind go back to, I can always go back to that.
Yeah.
I survived that. So I will never do anything to put myself in a position like I've been poor.
Yeah.
You know, like it is freeing in a way that once you're self-made and you've built all this stuff, it's like, I'm not going to take anything less than what I think I deserve and that what I'm worth.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we do for work is really, you know, connected to all that, our mindset and how we feel and how confident we are in the choices that we make about our career. And I know that's where mine comes from.
It's interesting that you use the word confidence because that takes so much confidence. And as you said, from the beginning of your life, obviously you've been put through a lot to get to a place where you have that confidence in yourself. So tell me about those first days when you put out that shingle for your new job. What was that like? What year was this? What were we
2011.
Thinking? 2011. Okay. I always ask questions like that because I think about social media and what that looked like and how that impacted your business. So, okay, you walk out of the door, your boss says you've got moxie. What happens next?
I gave him a couple months notice. You know, I worked through things at the organization and then I was like, I'm going to take a month off. And I went on a little bit of a trip and I traveled a bit. And then when I got home, it was early summer. And then it really hit me. I was like, oh, I don't have a paycheck coming in. You know, I got a mortgage, all this stuff. I did some research into like a couple things that I thought I might want to do. And because I'm one of the luckiest people in the entire world, I really believe that. I got a phone call from the dean of the risk management department. I had previously hired all of my interns from his program. It's the best department in the country for risk management. And he said, you used to hire the students. Now, would you like to come in and teach them how to do this? I heard you started, you know, an HR consulting firm teaching people how to interview. I went in for the meeting. Long story short, I got hired and they didn't have any materials to teach these students. Literally, they gave me a stack of stuff that had been Xeroxed over and over again from the 80s. I was like, okay, we're going to start here and I'm going to write a handbook. And for the first 5 years, I worked 6 days a week. I supported over 600 students a semester.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like getting a PhD in interviewing and I just loved it. I was mock interviewing the students, recording them. We would watch it back together. I would do resume reviews and I would teach a 3-hour class on how to interview. And I learned so much, but I was also super cocky. I had previously been the director of talent acquisition and I was like, I know how you're going to get a job.
Yeah.
I used to hire you. Do as I say, not as I do. And then I got pregnant with my first child and I realized the way becoming a parent opens you up to the world, right? And humbles you in
right.
so many
yes.
ways. And working with college students humbles you. I was looking around and asking myself, why did some of my students really get this and some don't? And I asked myself a simple question. I said, what if we don't all interview the same way? I wonder if I could write a personality assessment to determine someone's interview style. And what if I could help my students in a more meaningful way and so they feel validated? So I did that. I wrote a personality assessment. In a few months, we started testing it on the students. And they loved it. They ate it up. That handbook that I had written that those few years before, I don't think one of my students out of the 5,000 that I taught ever cracked that thing open. But I gave them a profile that was customized to them with their name on it. You know, Lydia, you're a charmer in interviews. This is what you prioritize. They would say to me, I didn't even know other people did this. They felt really validated. And isn't that where you start with anyone when you're coaching them? And so I sort of cracked this code and I always thought in interviewing, isn't it weird that no one studied this? We don't have a language for this. And then from there, they loved it. And then I started selling it to other departments at school. And then I was like, well, I'm going to create one for hiring managers. And I did. And then I went to all the SHRM conferences in 2019 and I was hustling with my booth and it was just like super entrepreneurial. And I believed in this product and I was so excited about this thing. And then COVID happened. And I was like, oh my God, what do I do? All these colleges were purchasing this to use it in their career development departments. And it was just like the tool that everyone wanted. And I was getting some momentum in the HR world. And then everything shut down.
Yeah.
And then my kids' school shut down and they were 2 and 5. So simultaneously to writing the personality assessment and developing this, I was pregnant with my daughter. I always get a little choked up when I say that because it was such a special time in my life. Like I was pregnant with these two things, you know? She's just such a great force. Talk about confidence. COVID stopped everything, obviously, for everyone. I always look at it like this was this talk about a humbling near-death experience that we all went through together. You know, those early times of COVID, you're like, what the hell? Are we going to get out of it? You know, Like we're all stuck in our houses. I need a project. And I thought, you know, I've always wanted to write a book. When am I ever going to get time to do it? And I wrote my book during my kids' nap times, during lockdown.
And here we are. So I want to also talk to you because, as you said, this all sort of started in 2011. Talk to me a little bit about how you were using social media, how you were using blogging. Were you doing any of those tools at the same time?
It's a great question. So when I started my business, I created a one-page website on WordPress. And someone told me that I should blog, and I've always liked to write. So I was like, okay, and I'm really type A, and I'm really goal-oriented. And I was like, okay, I'm going to put out one blog every Wednesday. And I did that for 4.5 years.
Amazing.
Never missed one Wednesday. Did anything go anywhere? No.
Gave you the discipline. Gave you some content.
It didn't do anything for my business. But I loved it. And the people that subscribed loved it. I shared it on social. Literally, I think maybe my blogs got one like. I'm not even joking. I was doing it because I was committed. And that's always how I've been. If I decide I'm going to do something, I do it. I don't care what anyone else does or thinks, whatever. Once I had my kids and the blogging wasn't really going anywhere and my business was taking a different direction, I stopped blogging and I started doing more of this. And then, of course, I created the assessment tool. And I wrote the book, and then the world started to open back up, and I was like, okay, well, now I have this manuscript. The hell do I do with a manuscript? I don't know. I don't know how to sell a book. And I did some research, and I realized you had to query a bunch of literary agents, and I queried 40 agents, and they all ignored me, every single one of them, except for one woman. She sent me an email, so I'll talk to you for 5 minutes. Oh. Changing the trajectory of my life in the same way that my bad internship did. She said to me, you're brilliant. Your book is brilliant. You're qualified to talk about it, but you don't have a platform. And in this day and age, you need a platform. And I was like, who has time for that? I have 2 little kids. I'm running this big business. What? I'm not doing that. And I resisted it, completely resisted it. And I got the same advice from a couple people. January, I'm going to make it a resolution. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to make some videos, 1 or 2 a day, see how it goes. I'm going to make a video on TikTok, and then I'm going to post it on all the different channels, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, everywhere. And in 6 weeks, I had 233,000 followers on Facebook.
On Facebook?
I was literally taking my TikToks and putting them on my personal Facebook page. I didn't know what I was doing. Again, I didn't have a business plan. I was just like, I have to do this. I believe so much in this book. Again, it goes back to, this is what I want. They told me I have to get this. I'm just focused on followers. Just get me, I think 300,000 is what she said. I'll just get there and I'll be able to get a book deal.
But tell me what you're producing that's getting this kind of numbers, because people do videos all the time. And trust me, how on earth do you get 230,000 views? You're putting out the right content, I guess is the answer to that question.
Well, this is how, right? The funny part is one of my employees, she sent me a message. She said, how does it feel to be an overnight success? And she and I laughed and laughed because I'd been doing it for 15 years.
Of course, yes.
So I had been teaching these interview skill workshops at Temple University and working with hiring managers for, at that point, 10 years I had been doing this. In person, over Zoom, but like 90%, I had worked out all this content for 10 years. Like a comedian, right? You're working your rooms, you're working the content. So I had been doing this for 10 years. I knew what worked. I knew what landed. I knew what resonated with my clients. So I just did it in front of the camera. And one of the reasons I got so many followers on Facebook was so quickly is I had a video go super viral. And it was a 1 minute video, which is key. It's either 60 seconds or 90 seconds. And it was questions to ask at the end of an interview.
Oh.
And it was right to the point.
And every single person in the world interviews for something over the course of their life.
And I speak to both job seekers and hiring managers, yeah. and I give really good, pragmatic advice right to the point. I don't bullshit, and it's kind of just how I am. And it just started to go like crazy. And again, I'm only thinking about followers. I was not thinking about, am I connecting with people? I wasn't thinking about, am I helping people? I wasn't thinking about, am I going to sell more of my own product? Literally, that's how naive I was. I was just like, okay, I just got to get a book deal. This is what I'm going to do. And then in the first 3 months, my website went from getting 200 hits a day to getting 5,000 hits a day.
Wow.
I went from selling a couple profiles to selling 20 or 30 a day. And then I was like, oh my God, this platform is powerful. Then when I had viral videos, they were getting picked up on global press. And I was like, whoa, this thing is on.
Yeah.
And then the most magical thing happened. I get choked up. I was getting direct messages and comments from people that were saying, I got my job because of you.
Yeah.
And then I was getting messages like, I made 30 more grand because of you, because I would have never known to negotiate if I hadn't watched your videos.
So you were actually changing people's lives as well.
And here I am just thinking, I just got to get a book deal. And so then I go back at this point in only just a few months. I had waited until about 6 months, June, July. I went back and queried all those agents that ignored me. And 8 of them offered to represent me.
Wow.
All because I proved the concept through social media. And I proved it because I practiced at it and I did it. It's the same thing I teach people when I teach them how to interview. You know, the more you do it, the more you know yourself, the better you'll do. And I just committed to it and I did it. And it's hard and it takes a lot of time. People are always like, how did you do this? I'm like, well, I invested, you know, 40 hours a week and
made it your job.
Researched the heck out of it and did it constantly. And I perfect it and I love it, which is helpful.
There was something that really struck me when I was thinking about this interview, because you said something in another piece of material. I think it was a press release I read. And you mentioned something about the fact that no one is ever taught to interview people. And, you know, I ran, I'd like to say maybe 9 or 10 teams over the course of a 24-year career at my previous employer. And I was never taught to interview. And I was thinking about one time when someone came in with her resume, and it was early days. I think I was running the events department at the time. And she put it down in front of me. And I remember kind of looking at it and thinking, like, what am I supposed to do with this? And also, like, what am I supposed to ask her? I had no idea what I was doing. And even at the end, I remember when people would come in to interview, I was always like, so tell me about yourself. I mean, I must have been the worst person to interview for, because the questions were never consistent and I never knew what I looked for. But one thing that you did say that I definitely felt was I could tell very quickly whether or not I liked the person and if I wanted them around in the office. And that was typically why I hired someone. If I like your energy, I like that you are a go-getter, you know, all the right things on your resume. But that was really why I hired people. As long as they had the skill set and I liked them, tell me why that is not right. And tell me what we could be looking for in the 4 different categories of person and style of interviewee.
Sure. Well, first of all, you know, it is the dirty little secret that 90% of hiring managers are never trained to interview. I was a director of talent acquisition. I had never been trained to interview.
Yeah.
I was a charmer like you. And if I liked you, that was a bonus. You know, that was the most important metric, like I write about in my book. And it wasn't until I got out and was teaching so many students and saw so many different personalities where I realized that this, my way of thinking, could be very limiting. And that's painful when you go in and you're cocky and you have a chip on your shoulder and you think you're the one that has all the answers. And then you have to admit. And as I collected this research, my hypothesis was like, I'm going to find, you know, the one interview style that's great, that gets all the offers. It's going to be mine. You know, let's just get to it. Then I realized that I was completely wrong. And that's what I discovered in all of this. I took all of the results of our interns and college students getting offers and compared it with their interview styles. And there wasn't one style that was better at interviewing than others. And that took me some months to really unpack deeply. Because I really held this belief that I knew how to do it better than anyone else. But then I realized I wasn't the only one. We all think that the way we interview is the best. Everybody. And that's a universal experience. So the way it breaks down is there are 4 styles. Charmers want to be liked. Challengers want to be respected and heard. Examiners want to get it right. And harmonizers want to adapt. I'll give you a little bit more detail. charmers look at an interview like a performance and they're the star of the show.
Yes.
And they like interviewing more than anyone else. Unlike other interview styles, charmers will tell a joke, they'll pay a compliment, they really relish answering questions about themselves. Challengers, on the other hand, look at an interview like a cross-examination. They look at an interview like they're highly skeptical, they're going to figure something out. They show their qualifications by asking a lot of tough questions. Charmers would never do that. We just want to have fun. We want to tell stories. And then we have examiners. Examiners look at an interview like a test that they are either going to pass or fail. And then it's very binary and it's very black and white and it's about work. And they rarely open up and talk about themselves. That's the opposite of the charmer. And then lastly, the opposite of the challenger is the harmonizer. You know, challengers put a stake in the ground. Harmonizers would never. They want to be collaborative. They're warm. They look in an interview like a tryout for a team that they want to join. They think about the collective. The challenger never does. The challenger's like, me, how am I going to be respected and heard? And what I learned is none of these styles are right or wrong. It's just our way of getting someone to see that we're qualified in an interview, which is a very weird artificial event where someone has something of power over you. And the interesting thing I found also is that your interview style doesn't change whether you're a job seeker or a hiring manager. It doesn't change depending on the position of the table you're sitting at or the position of power that you have. It's all artificial anyways, because it's tied more to your personality. So I think the point of understanding your style is understanding your baseline and knowing how to tap into these other styles and also knowing how to appreciate them. Like we said earlier, I hate spreadsheets. And man, do I have amazing people on my team that love the spreadsheets.
Yeah.
So they do the spreadsheets and I do the talking.
Yeah, I always hire to my weakness. That's something I learned over the course of my career too. Let's pretend everyone on this entire podcast that's listening right now is thinking to themselves, like, I am a fill in the blank. What do you do with this new skill set that you've just explained to all of us? When you walk into an interview and you're like, oh, I'm a harmonizer, but my interviewee is a challenger. What happens then? Because those are polar opposites. So what do you do? What are some skills that we can take from this that in our next interview we can use?
Yeah, so I unpack each interview style in my book and we talk about strengths as, and then instead of weaknesses, I call them overused strengths. So anything can be overused turns into a weakness essentially. And at the end of every chapter, we unpack what it would be like to be a job seeker harmonizer or a hiring manager harmonizer. And then we do opposite sections and how you interact, like what comes up for you if you're a harmonizer and you're interviewing with a challenger, for example. The old advice and very pervasive advice tells people that you should just memorize the perfect answers and you should just tell people what they want to hear in job interviews, right? We've heard this, or you've gotten these messages from society. I think that's insane. Like, where else in your life can you imagine going to get help or hiring a coach? And they're like, I know the ticket. I know what you got to do. Just tell them what they want to hear. Also, this is like dating. It's like making a match. It's like you should be representing yourself authentically. You should be showing up. So I say all that to say that you should never think that, oh, this hiring manager's a challenger, so I got to like be a challenger. Absolutely not. That's not what I'm ever saying. I never encourage anyone to pretend to be something that they're not. But we all know using our emotional intelligence that there are moments where we can shift, right? Yes. There are moments when I'm a charmer, but I'm like, okay, I got to dig deep here and I got to be an examiner and I got to talk about like give them some stats. They're going to want to hear about like how many people I've helped, you know? It's different if I say, yeah, I'm a career influencer and I teach people how to interview. It's different if I say, I have 2 million followers and I've conducted over 10,000 interviews.
Right.
An examiner knows that, not charmers. Charmers are just in that. So those are some ways that you can tap into your opposites and shift, but it's not ever about pretending to be something you're not.
One other thing that you talk a lot about in the book is the importance of being self-aware when you are interviewing. What do you mean by that?
I remember the moment when I was teaching a class, and I remember when I figured out that thing, and I was like, you know what it is? The best students of mine who really nail this, who are naturals, it's not, you know, like I said before, it's not one interview style over the other. It's that they know themselves, is that they've mastered self-knowledge, self-awareness. And that was one of the light bulb moments that helped me in realizing that I should write a personality assessment to help people better understand themselves. Because in the most basic sense, an interview is a set of questions about you. And the more you know yourself, the better you'll do. As a hiring manager, the more you know yourself, you'll understand where your biases come from. Because if you're a charmer, you're going to know that you're going to be easily swayed by someone who comes in and pays you a compliment and makes you laugh. And you're like, ooh, they like me. Well, then I like them.
Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to someone who was heading out on an interview this week? No matter what their category, what is sort of ubiquitous advice that you would give them as someone who's seen so many interviews over the course of your career?
I really try to plan my content in a way that like it's very accessible because I want to democratize how we do this. Hiring managers aren't trained. Job seekers aren't trained. I titled the first chapter of my book, An Interview Can Change Your Life. I really believe that. I know that if you follow me on social, I give so many free tips. You can watch 400 videos probably. You watch those, you're going to be in pretty good shape. So if you're in an emergency situation, you don't have any money, that's what I would do. Start. Those are the free tips. And then, of course, if you want a deeper dive and you want to discover your interview style, you can go on my website, theinterviewology.com, and take our interview style assessment and receive a 40-page workbook that outlines everything that you're doing right and wrong with questions to practice and all the stuff. And then from there, obviously, if you're really interested in interview styles, you can get my book, Interviewology, which unpacks all of the interview styles. And like I said, gives examples and principles for both job seekers and hiring managers. And like I said, it sounds so simple, but it's true. The best thing that you can do ahead of an interview is practice interview questions, is practice getting to know yourself. The first time someone asks you or you ever hear, tell me about yourself or what are your strengths and weaknesses? Why should I hire you? Why do you want to work here? Should not be in the conference room with an intimidating executive staring at you. You should know that cold after watching some free tips online. The best thing you can do is open the camera app on your phone and record yourself answering, tell me about yourself. Why do you want to work here? What did you do in your last job? What are your strengths and weaknesses? And you do it 50 times.
Yeah.
And you watch yourself back. And extra bonus points if you have someone in your life who can help you, a friend or mentor, someone that you trust, someone that will be careful with your feelings and help you and give you good guidance. If you don't have that, just do it yourself. And then, you know, if you really want to, you could book a session with me or other career coaches offer mock interview prep.
That's great to hear because I feel like people are always looking for interview just advice. I think it feels like such a scary thing. And in many cases, there's so many emotions wrapped up to it. When you go into an interview, you're worried about finances. You are looking for a new job. Maybe you were fired from the last one. Like, there are just so many emotions that go into many types of interviews. All right. My last two questions for you. What is your favorite question to ask in an interview? And what is your least favorite question? And that can be either you've heard it or it's just in your own wheelhouse.
So, you know, I get asked this a lot, like, what's the best question to ask in an interview as a hiring manager? The best questions to ask are derived from the job description. Hiring managers need to do their research ahead of time. The best questions come from you as a hiring manager sitting and thinking, okay, what do I need? Reading the job description, thinking about your team, thinking about what is the technical things. And then from there, you create great questions. One of my favorite questions that I always start every interview with is, first of all, here's a tip. Every hiring manager talks too much. They need to talk only 20% of the time. Most hiring managers talk 80% of the interview. That's not an interview. No, you talk very little and you ask a question, right? But I love putting in a candidate, he's making a tiny bit of small talk, thanking them for coming in and then saying, please walk us through your resume. Opening the floor for them and saying, starting here on the second page where you started blah, 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 and then up to present day, we'd love to hear about your chief responsibilities, why you moved positions, you know, floor's yours. And then it gives them this opportunity to, like, you know, you're not peppering them, you're not treating it like it's a firing squad. You just let them walk through. And if they're nervous, I sometimes will, you know, add it in a reassuring sound or, you know, ask them a question. And then they can kind of, it's sort of a presentation rather than going right in and be like, why do you want to work here? That's one of my favorites. My least favorite you know, there's two categories, right? Like really, you know, it's the inappropriate questions. And since so many hiring managers aren't trained to interview, they don't even know it's inappropriate, or they do know it and they defend it and they just think, well, whatever. So I actually got this yesterday. I was being interviewed by a reporter. So it doesn't stop in job interviews. And this just really grinds my gears. I've made videos about this. Had a whole conversation with this person. I'm pretty well qualified to do this. I have a book out about this. I have millions of followers. I know what I'm talking about. He looks at me at the end and he goes, so what does your husband do? My least favorite interview questions are ones that aren't about the job, that aren't about the, you know, like there's so many questions you could ask about someone's qualifications and their passion. And it doesn't have to be sterile if you're having a structured interview, but they're just those inappropriate ones, especially women are usually the ones that get the inappropriate questions. I can hear the women's going in the comments right now. Like I made a post about this on Facebook. It got over 5,000 comments, and some of the women's comments truly, I was aghast. I almost cried. I couldn't believe it. The things they were telling me that people said to them in interviews. And that's another main motivation for me to train hiring managers to interview better.
Yeah.
We got to stop this nonsense.
Yeah. And I think the crazy part is that somebody would ask you that in this day and age because they don't even know not to ask at this point, or that that might feel like the wrong question to ask somebody who had created such an incredible platform and had been doing this her entire life. So hopefully everybody will hear that and know that that is not a question that you want to be asking any woman out there, because it doesn't matter at the end of the day what we do. It's what we do on our own, period, end of sentence. Well, it has been such a pleasure to speak to you. This time has flown by, truly. And I feel like I've learned so many amazing things about interviewing. And I love the idea that there are so many different ways that we can look at this. But tell us where we can find you. I know you've given us sort of a longer thing, but give us the Instagram handles. Just give us anything that we can do right now while we're sitting here with our phones.
Yeah, I would say you can find me wherever you get your social media, because I'm on all the platforms. So if you're on Instagram, just type in Anna Papalia. Come to my website, theinterviewology.com. We've got lots of free resources, and that's where you can discover your interview style and get your own profile. And then you can purchase Interviewology wherever books are sold.
Wonderful. Well, I can't wait to keep following you. And as a fellow charmer, I would like to thank you so much for being on Claim Your Confidence. I am Lydia Finette. And as you know, I always ask everyone a question to think about or something to DM us about when they have listened to this podcast. And today I would just ask you, I mean, are you a charmer, a challenger, an examiner, or a harmonizer? DM me, DM Anna. We both love to hear from you. Thank you guys again for listening. It has been so fun to be with you today, Anna. It's been such a pleasure to be with you. A thank you to Joe. A thank you to Rockefeller Center and Tishman Speyer and Newsstand Studios for hosting this podcast. I look forward to being with all of you again next Tuesday. Thanks for listening.